The following is an iHeartRadio podcast.
The Soundtrack Show will begin in 5, 4, 3.
And now, an interview with Kristen Anderson Lopez and Robert Lopez, discussing the songs of Frozen 2. This is The Soundtrack Show. Welcome back to The Soundtrack Show. I'm your host, David W. Collins, and this special episode features a recent interview that was recorded right here in my Soundtrack Show studio with the incredible songwriting duo of Robert Lopez and Kristen Anderson Lopez, whose songs have literally changed popular culture over the years, most notably with their mega hit franchise, Frozen.
Into the end.
In this interview, we discuss their songwriting journey that was the making of Frozen 2, a movie musical that features incredible songs like the DS-era powerhouse Into the Unknown, the folksy melody of All Is Found, the comically spooky When I Am Older, the Baba O'Reilly meets piano opener Some Things Never Change, and the 80s power ballad-inspired Lost in the Woods. They share their insights, their challenges, and some great stories. Here is our Soundtrack Show interview with Bobby and Kristen Lopez.
Yes, the wind blows a little bit colder, and we're all getting older, and the clouds are moving on with every autumn breeze. Peter Pumpkin just became fertilizer,
and my leaf's a little sadder and wiser.
That's why I rely on certain certainties. Yes, some things never change. Like the feel of your hand in mine, some things stay the same.
Like how we get along just fine.
Like an old stone wall that'll never fall. Some things are always true. Some things never change. Like how I'm holding on tight to you.
Thanks you guys so much for doing this. This is great.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Bobby's been so excited. I'm excited too, but Bobby in particular listens to you religiously. He's like, the Soundtrack Show came out today.
Which
it's Wednesday.
I can't believe it's still, I mean, first of all, it's great that you guys are actually here in the place where I make this. And because usually I put this out, the show goes out, and then usually about a day or two later, I get a text from Bobby going, hey,
yeah.
Oh, what about this? And then I analyzed this, and I saw, you know, and I was just like, oh my God, kindred spirit listening to the
Seriously.
Show. So thank you for always, you know, giving me inspiration and fuel to add to the next episode and things.
I think the most important thing is to like always be learning something. And I never went to film school. I learned tons from your show.
Oh, thanks.
I think it's great. And I love the way you analyze music.
And the storytelling, your storytelling, your ability to say, you know, and listen to what John Williams does here.
From the
now,
point of view.
Listen what he does here. And you get everybody so excited.
It's true. I get carried away sometimes.
But it's a real gift. It's a real gift.
No. I would encourage you to go further. I mean, that's like more of the green lightsaber moment. Like, that was amazing.
That was great.
He made me listen
I was
to
like,
that.
Now,
that's what I'm referencing.
Am I going to be judged for that? I don't care. Because that was, I'll admit, semi-autobiographical.
Yeah, no, but I think that's a moment that every boy of that year had in common. Like, a green light thing.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my God. It's the little things, isn't it? Yeah. Really? Well, I just wanted to say that, you know, we had you on the show last time. It was such a great interview. I've gotten so much great feedback about it. Your story is incredible. Your songwriting process is incredible. One of the things we talked about that last time was what you were up to at the time, which was debuting Frozen on Broadway. Right. So since then, I've had a chance to see it. Thank you very much for that. We went and saw the December premiere in Los Angeles.
Oh, good. You saw the tour cast.
We saw the tour cast.
They're fantastic.
Fantastic. Yeah. You know, we got a babysitter and we're like, oh my gosh, we're out. What is our life right now? It was date night. You know, it was so amazing. And it just blew me away. Like seeing... seeing the songs in action, you know, hearing them and talking about them is one thing. But for example, the coronation, you know, to hear Dangerous to Dream on the soundtrack is one thing. But to then suddenly realize that I'm in the storytelling power of being inside Elsa's head during the coronation, which is something you can't do in the movie or you didn't have time to do in the movie.
Well, you could do through close up.
Yeah. Through close up, but
through those
true.
Huge eyes and eyebrows, but you in the musical.
It doesn't work on stage. If you can't do it close up except with a song. So that's why we had to write that song.
There's so many other benefits. You know, the emotion of it. I mean, it, forgive the pun, kind of crystallizes her fear. See what I did there? I might have written that one ahead of time.
Very good.
But no, it was incredible. And the other thing that I wasn't expecting was how adorable those kids were at the top of the show. Like, you just don't realize. And then you're seeing these kids act out Anna and Elsa, and they were hilarious and talented. Yeah. And
those kids are great. I feel like our casting, shout out to our to Bernie Telsey casting.
Yeah.
Because our casting people are really great about making sure, especially with Anna and Elsa, that the kids are not trained seals, mm-hmm. that they're not going like, do you want to build a snowman?
Yeah.
Like, they are really acting it and feeling it. And so they're real kids up there. Because otherwise, kids on stage can be slightly alienating when you mm-hmm. feel that they're forced or held hostage up there.
Yeah, and the writing was charming and they were just so natural. And, you know, the power of seeing that story with an audience like that, with the applause and the music, I mean, it really... to me, kind of drives home something that we talk about a lot on this show, the importance of music. But I want to get more into musicals, you know, coming up in 2020 in the soundtrack show, because, you know, it's such a paradigm shift. You're so core. You're such a core part of the story. Yeah. You're the sort of the emotional engine. You're the exposition. You're the character development. You're kind of driving the entire thing in a way that film score just doesn't. It's a completely different.
It's a different way of looking at it. Yeah, you have to. The way I think about it, and the hard truth for our collaborators sometimes, is it's our job to write the best parts of the story. We're trying to write the climaxes, not all of them, obviously, but you don't want the songs to be the part where you check your watch.
Right. Where the plot stops.
Exactly.
And you just kinda
think of it, and it was validated by an interview I had the privilege of doing with Stephen Schwartz this fall.
Wow.
He and I use the same word, architect. I think of, if you're a songwriter for a musical, you're really the architect. You are building, you're in charge of making the giant pillars that are holding up the roof and the walls. And the roof and the walls are you know, really important too, the dialogue and what you're seeing. But if those pillars aren't there, and if those songs are not in the key, most important moments of your storytelling, then it's kind of false. You can feel that it's a little bit wonky. You can feel when it's a movie with songs versus a musical where the songs are all of the pivotal decision points or
fully
revelations.
Integrated, fully, you know, and there's a real exchange too between the dialogue and the lyrics in Frozen, but also in Frozen 2, which is what this brings me to. You know, I wanted to talk to you today, of course, about Frozen 2, which, again, got a babysitter, went to the theater, saw it, had a great time. The kids, of course, just organically found it, and we hear it. I mean, we listen to it every day. The songs are just so wonderful, and I want to talk to you about those. But first, I want to ask you, what was the process like when you're doing Frozen Broadway? You're having to write all these new songs for an existing story and kind of break another story altogether with Disney.
Right.
What were you doing that simultaneously, or was there kind of a good gap there?
It wasn't a gap, but as we were writing the songs for Frozen Broadway, we were in video conference a lot with the team in Burbank working on the story for Frozen 2, but we hadn't really written any songs until the show was about done.
Yeah,
That's when we started writing songs.
So Jennifer Lee and the two of us were having to do both. And that was a real positive thing because we were working together every single day. We were, you know, she was writing the script in Burbank, the dialogue for the Broadway musical, while we were writing the bulk of the songs. The bulk of the work fell on us to make like 12 more songs for the Broadway musical. The bulk of the work on the movie, like the Viz Dev, fell on Jennifer Lee. So she was sort of driving the ship of the movie with us going back and forth while we were driving the ship of the musical for a while. Mm-hmm. And then we would switch sometimes. Then it would be time for us to write a song and for her to do a new draft. But it was a lot. We were doing a lot.
I think they did inform each other, too. I think,
and you can hear it musically, too, I feel like. Can't you? Some of those arrangements made it into the movie from the musical. Or,
that's true. That's a separate issue. But the...
Go ahead.
No, I was saying, like, the mother, the character of the mother, who was so important in Frozen 2, I think we found that as a result of the work we did on Broadway, because it felt like she, for some reason, should know what to do in that moment when Anna gets struck in the beginning, and that gave her that secret. She calls to the hidden folk in the play, mm-hmm. right? So I think that discovery gave us, you know, a road to go down for the movie,
right?
In terms of the mother.
So if you go and see, so Frozen 2 actually, or I should say, the musical actually kind of provides depth to Frozen 2 then, because they're kind of connected in a way that the first movie wasn't.
It's sort of an Easter egg.
Yeah.
To go, oh, the mother knows, she was a nomad of the North.
Right.
My parents were nomads of the North.
Right.
Which is a big Easter egg to the fact that Anna and Elsa are mixed race. Mm-hmm. Here, spoiler alert.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully you've all seen the movie. If not, yeah. But so how do you go into a project like Frozen 2, deciding what the songs are going to be? I think you only have, I think, maybe seven songs, or?
Yeah, seven songs this time.
How do you define those kind of key moments that are so integral, or, you know, the pillars to your house? You mentioned being an architect.
Well,
how do you whittle down to that process?
Well, it also begins with, let's imagine in the architect metaphor, that Jennifer Lee and Chris Buck are our clients, collaborators. So Jennifer Lee and Chris Buck said, we're gonna grow this movie up. Our audience is 6 years older. Our girls, you know, Anna and Elsa are older too. And how do we approach maturity and change? And that was the first lead thing that came from Jennifer Lee and Chris Buck. And it got us very excited because we wanted to, you know, Frozen was something we wrote when our children were much younger. Now we had a 10-year-old and a 14-year-old, and we were tackling very different things, like how do we help our 14-year-old listen to her gut and find her path? How do we let them know that sometimes change is hard? Sometimes you have to go through middle school to experience the strength you're going to need to face the real world.
Oh my God. Yeah. These comments, again, just like last time, kind of reinforce how deeply personal songwriting is and how they inform, you know, had anyone else been given this task, it would have turned out just radically different. And dare I say, wouldn't have the same sort of heart and personal touch to it that the first one did. So this really is kind of semi-autobiographical again, in that you're kind of growing up.
Well, you have to bring your own experience whenever you're making a story. You can't just create a generic story. You have to bring your own emotions to it from your own life, and different things resonate to different people. But Jen and Chris were, Chris, when we were making, at the end of Frozen 1, Chris, we were doing the press junket, and Chris lost his son. And so watching him go through that terrible grief, but still have to soldier on and do his job at the same time, that definitely made its way into our choice for Frozen 2 in terms of Anna and what she goes through towards the end, the grief of that you know, next right thing moment. And so everybody brings stuff from their own life, and the story starts with where emotionally do we want to go? We don't know any details of the plot yet, but where emotionally do we want to take it? I remember they made this amazing, almost like a sizzle reel that was just for emotion. We knew we wanted Anna to find her power, basically find her leadership. And they used music and images to show how that might feel in a you know, maybe 5 minute reel.
What music did they use?
I don't even know, but it was whatever it was, it made you cheer at the end because she became queen, even though you didn't know what happened in the story. And then Elsa, we knew we wanted her to find where she was meant to be, because there was something about her sitting in Arendelle, even though she was happy and loved her family, that was not fully fulfilled. And so we knew the story wanted to be about her going from that place of longing to a place of total fulfillment and finding, connecting with her reason to be. So that, remember that,
right.
Remember that
yeah,
little
I
reel?
Do.
Yeah,
that was Mark Smith created that. Mark Smith was the head of story.
Yeah.
And, you know, he actually did a huge amount of heavy lifting in that first year just to help us find tone. Mm. And that sounds more simple than it is. It really, like, what he had to do was huge amounts of research and also looking at color and shape. And again, pulling back 1,000 miles, maybe out of that first year of research, one of the true north that comes out of that is that if the first movie was about sometimes true love isn't what it looks like, sometimes it's not that prince coming and kissing you, sometimes it's in your family and you already have it. To us, the thing that was very exciting was, what if true love comes in the form of finding your own path and place in the world and your own strength? Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes true love doesn't even come from another person. It comes from clicking into what the universe wants from you.
Your role, your place in, you know, fulfilling your destiny or whatever.
Right.
And
yeah.
Going through a hard journey to get there, yeah. Going out of your comfort zone and challenging yourself, and even risking your relationships, possibly with the people who are
closest to you.
So knowing this, knowing, you know, kind of where you started tonally in terms of a dark place, there was grief involved. There was also, you know, reaching the pinnacle of Anna becoming queen. There was sort of self-realization. How do you start? What was the first song that you kind of cracked in this process that made it into the movie?
Well, the other tonal thing that Jen and Chris brought to it was they wanted it to be a mystery. They wanted it to take a genre departure from the first fairy tale film, and they wanted the characters to be studying a mystery from the past and trying to puzzle it out so that they could go forward in the present towards the future that they needed to be in. And so at first we were a little nervous because we don't know too many mysteries that are musicals, and it's hard to capture that. What's emotional about a mystery?
Yeah.
So the first thing that we looked at was the mother, right? The mother holds all the answers, but can't really communicate them because she dies. We figured out that in the prologue, she would sing them a lullaby, and the lullaby would be sort of in code the roadmap to the whole adventure and what she really wanted to tell them but couldn't, mm-hmm. about their heritage and about they're about Elsa's destiny. So,
and there's also, we looked at a lot of Norwegian lullabies or Scandinavian lullabies, and they're all in that
minor mode.
Yeah. They all have that feeling of like a fog creeping over, like your screensaver over there,
yeah.
creeping over the fjord. And also, even just the ones that we all know, Rockabye Baby, When the Bough Breaks, the Cradle Will Fall, they all yeah. have a warning in them too. So in that particular song, In All Is Found, you've got a roadmap for the whole movie. You've got her saying, there's a path for you. There's a river full of memory. You've got go too far and you'll be drowned. And
all is found.
Mm-hmm. And all is found. Yeah. When all is lost, all is found. And you'll notice in with our two main characters, but with everybody, when they are the most lost is when they find their way.
Right. So All Is Found was actually, not only is it chronologically first in the movie, but it was kind of the first.
It was the first song
kind
we,
of
we hit, yeah.
call, you know, what kind of spoke to you is like, okay, we need this sort of Arendelle-ish or folk song.
Yeah, we wanted it to feel mysterious.
Generational. And
epic, give it that sort of, and we chose an instrument, actually, our orchestrator, Dave Metzger, who is a huge inspiration to us as we work.
I like to say he's the secret sauce.
He's the secret sauce.
The secret sauce of Frozen. He doesn't get enough credit for the fact that what he does with instruments, how it makes it both epic and incredibly personal. And if you ever get the chance to meet him, he's just a beautiful human being.
He's wonderful.
Beautiful, kind.
Oh yeah, I'd love
person.
To talk to him. That would be amazing. Yeah, because it takes it to a whole new level of. Well, texture and emotion.
There's the solo instrument in the beginning of it is, it's a sort of Scandinavian dulcimer called a kantele, and it's the traditional instrument of the Kalevala, which is that Icelandic or Finnish folk saga, like the original kind of Tolkien-ish mm-hmm, myth, mm-hmm. And it's all played on this, and it can be 11 strings, it can be 20 strings, it can be. Well, and it's got this kind of, to me, it's just so evocative of like Lord of the Rings kind of myth.
Where the north wind meets the sea, there's a river full of memory. Sleep, my darling, safe and sound. For in this river all is found. In her waters deep and true lie the answers and a path for you. Dive down deep into her sound, but not too far or you'll be drowned.
Kalevala, isn't that kind of where sort of the Nibelung and all of that kind of German folklore came from as
I think it's all sort of that.
Nibelung, all I can think of is that Pat Benatar song, Nibelung, Nibelung, Nibelung together.
I love it. Oh my God. A very different take on the ring cycle for sure.
And now for a brief intermission. We return now to the Soundtrack Show.
The songs were even for their function just struck me as being very unique. The first time I heard them, actually, I was in this room. You know, before I saw the movie, I saw the songs. We talked about them. I sent you guys this long, glowing email. God, that was so raw. Like, and then this, and then that, and then notice this.
That email meant a lot to Bobby. I think the other thing, going to the end of the process, there's this moment when you release it to the world. Where you are so raw. It's like,
you don't know what the reaction's gonna be.
You don't know what the reaction is. You don't know who's seen it and who hasn't. You don't know who is keeping their opinion secret or withholding it from you.
Right.
You just walk around really paranoid and like very raw. So those friends who reach out, and I know no one's gonna feel sorry for the people who wrote Frozen or Frozen 2, but it is when it's so big and there's so much pressure on it that time really does make you feel very naked when you walk around. You're like, I'm a human being.
Yeah. People forget, they focus on the commerce of it, but they forget that it's art, you know, it's your artists and that is always just by nature deeply personal. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the point being not to feel sorry for us, but to say thank you for reaching out to Bobby, because I think that email came at a moment where we definitely felt like everything was sort of out of control and there was no more steering the boat. It was just like, good luck, I hope it goes well, and to hear from someone whose opinion we respect so much that you liked it.
Oh,
just is one of those things that helps you like go to lunch and order a bagel.
Well, I you know, not to be to expose myself too much here, but I wept like I was. Well, first of all, there were all of these things that you and I have talked about that made their way into the show, you know, because when we first met, the whole conversation we had was around pressure because I'd been talking about The Empire Strikes Back. And,
right,
you know, exactly. In my previous podcast and you and I started talking about that. And then I started imagining, you know, my own experiences amplified to what you're going through with Frozen, which was, you know, just a like changed culture. You know, I mean, that's at that level. It's just got to be tremendous. And then to come out with a second movie like that with these songs, it just really, really struck me, especially when I heard Into the Unknown. I don't want to skip past Some Things Never Change because I want to talk about
that. Okay. All right.
But Into the Unknown, when I heard it, and, you know, of course, the DS era, which you had told me was in the trailer, but I missed it the first time because you were taking so much in. But then to hear that a whole song sort of featured this call, and then to hear it harmonizing with each other in a major key and being sort of uplifting when she locks into it. Like it worked on so many levels for me, not to mention that it just kicked ass. Like it was such a kick ass song, you know, that I just sat here and I was like, it was also like midnight and the kids were down and I was like exhausted. I'm like, all right, let's check this out. And I had to blast it.
No one's holding you to it.
No, but it was just great. And I was like, oh, well this is, and I'm sure you guys talk about Into the Unknown in every interview you do, but it was like instantly struck me as this hit on so many levels and helped me really understand what the movie was going to be when I walked into it.
I can hear you, but I won't. Some look for trouble while others don't. There's a thousand reasons I should go about my day and ignore your whispers, which I wish would go away. Oh. If I heard you, which I don't, and spoken for, I fear. Everyone I've ever loved is here within these walls. I'm sorry, secret siren, but I'm blocking out your calls. I've had my adventure, I don't need something new. I am afraid of what I'm risking if I follow you into the unknown.
I just loved it.
That song was the key. We had written a different song for that slot, and it didn't have. There was no voice in the story yet. It was just Elsa with her problem, wanting to find the truth, wanting to solve the mystery, and it was called "I Seek the Truth." And it kind of sat there when we watched the screening. It didn't feel dramatic enough. And
it was very emo. She was very cerebral. It started with like, Mother, I am flipping through the past, turning pages of a book to find you.
It's on the extended.
Right,
yeah,
that's right.
It's you singing it, actually.
Yes. Yeah,
Mother, I am flipping through the past, turning pages of a book to find you. Mother, I am lost. Mother, I am scared. Mother, I don't know what to do. What were you trying to say? Must have written it down for a reason. Must have thought I'd find it someday. I feel this power surging through me every minute like a horse that's gone wild. Mother, you were here. Mother, you are gone. And you left behind a scared child. Can't sit around and cry. There's too much to lose. And I think that I've been given this power for a reason, and I need to know why. I seek the truth. What are you telling me? I'm ready to hear. Can't go forward this way with questions growing day by day. I seek the truth. What are you showing me? I'm ready to see. I need to know who you are, to know who I am.
Yeah, it's a great song.
I don't think it's a bad song, but...
It was too, you know, we had been there, done that with Let It Go. We've seen Elsa up on the mountain alone, puzzling through her existence. What was so great, and I do, you know, it's hard to say, through all of our talks, you never know who was the person who said, let's make it a voice.
Right.
Let's make the metaphor, let's make a duet, so that Elsa is basically in duet with her destiny, mm-hmm. Which is, I think, kind of what goes on in that moment of restlessness. Any artist I know has had this moment of saying, I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing. And it is, you're in a duet with your future self, like, or with the self that's going to really create something that matters. Whether it's you're stuck in North Carolina going, I gotta move to New York, or you're stuck at a temp job saying, like, if only I could make enough money that I could write full time. All of these things are true for me, by the way. Yeah.
But let's say it's a friend.
Let's say it's a friend who is saying, gosh, I've been writing the same thing for 10 years. It's time to start writing something new.
Yeah, that's where we are now.
You're walking into the unknown. You're in a duet with the unknown, but with the potential of something that's calling you to do something new.
And that's another musical part of the mystery, to say again, like, to bring mystery into the musical storytelling of it, that no one knows where this voice is coming from. No one knows exactly what it is. Maybe it's leading her to her death, hence the Dies Irae.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe it's you know, a voice that's calling her to her purpose. And maybe it's a little of both. And that's why when we realize, like, oh, okay, it'll be this high call that only Elsa can hear, we thought, well, we have to use the Dies Irae.
Short, sweet, packed with so much, 700 years of history or whatever. Yeah.
Your musicology obviously is in a dialogue with Bobby's music. you guys are in a dialogue as artists through this podcast, because I'm sure that was playing out when we were discovering that on the piano. And another thing...
I'm going to try not to get emotional here while you're talking.
Another thing that's kind of fun is that into the unknown, it's an octave.
Yeah.
Into the unknown, it's stepping a foot outside.
Then coming back.
And then into the unknown.
11th.
Yeah, 11th.
Going into the
Dies Irae. Yeah. And then she does it in, yeah.
Right. But an 11th, you know, it sort of mirrors the story of she's been safe, she's been happy, but there's a tug of war, there's something pulling her. She's stepping out, but she's coming back. She doesn't want to leave her happiness.
I mean, she's leading up to it, too.
Right.
She's doing it, then she's doing a little bit more,
yeah.
And then she's finally doing it. And kind of embracing, yeah, the Dies Irae. Yeah,
right. But it also leads and ends, comes to Dies Irae, mm-hmm. which means possible death or
danger.
At least transformation.
Well, when she states it, it's in this kind of major and then into the relative minor. But then when Aurora mm-hmm. states it back, it's definitely back in its sort of...
It's E flat minor blues.
Yeah.
Every day it's a little harder as I feel my power grow. Don't you know there's part of me that loves to go?
The Soundtrack Show will continue in a moment. We return now to The Soundtrack Show.
Elsa? Do you want to build a snowman? Come on, let's go and play.
I wanted to ask you about your piano intros because, you know, you had these great piano intros for Build a Snowman and Let It Go. This one feels like a minor riff on Do You Want to Build a Snowman?
It does. And, you know, I don't think we had planned that out, but I think it kind of makes sense.
It's just your
sense.
Voice. It's just your hand. It's just your hands on the instrument.
Yeah.
It's also what I love. You know, a lot of it, Bobby noodles a lot. And then when he finds something that makes my spine tingle, I go, yes.
Yeah. So it's your guitar riff at the top. That's right.
The thing we had going into it, which we had written for another project and not used, was the riff, the piano part from the chorus, the major version of it.
Yeah.
And then Kristen said, well, it starts in the middle of the night, so let's make it feel a little more middle of the night. So I put it up the octave and put it in that sort of minor with a sixth.
Well, and that kind of sort of 6/8 or 12/8 kind of, you know, that sort of, it just speaks of adventure too, you know, that sort of classic, you know, kind of that.
It sounds like a
Caribbean
horse, like water horse you might be riding across the water.
Yeah, exactly. Musical storytelling. Yeah. You know, it's great. And the other thing that strikes me about it too is that, you know, Elsa as a character in the first movie was all about finding joy in the release of being who she was. And so there's something about the rewrite, you know, you going after that song where she's again getting to release and like she's becoming comfortable, you know, she's okay with, you know, not knowing what's going on. And there's something, there's like a release there that just seems so perfect for her character. Am I making sense?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what we like wanted to get.
Definitely. Yeah.
Let it go. It's tapped into the joy of Let It Go,
but uh-huh. in a totally different way because there's some fear in the joy. It's, mm-hmm. you know, and to see her be afraid of, you know, something that isn't herself was kind of neat because she likes it. You know, that was really like a really interesting, oh, this is different. This is a brave warrior Elsa against the world, not against herself.
Right. Elsa, you know, has a triptych. We talk about this a lot, that Let It Go was like rebellious. Like, this is who I am. Mm-hmm. But she had to be sort of alone and isolated. And then at the end of Frozen 1, she's accepted and accepted by her family. And there's something very different about then being able to find your self-acceptance once you've been accepted by everyone. She's still on a journey of self-acceptance. So Into the Unknown is actually allowing, it's a tug of war, but it's allowing herself to say, like, now I am loved and accepted, but there's still something tugging at me that I need
here's
inside.
What I want. Yeah. And for the first time she's allowed to express what it is that she wants, and it's hesitant.
She's moving
but
up
then,
the pyramid of uh-huh. human needs or
yes,
whatever.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then you get to show yourself, yeah. which is sort of the arrival of Frozen 1 and Frozen 2.
Show yourself, it's your turn. Are you the one I've been looking for all of my life?
Thank you.
that's a really powerful moment as well, because it's just so earned through so much turmoil and finally getting there. But there's so much strength in that song, you know, again, as well. So there's just, it's a wonderful Elsa movie. And again, what strikes me about it is that I was getting all of this before I had even seen it. You know, I was all out of the music because I'd heard the soundtrack a lot before I went into it. But I mentioned this before, and I want to get back to it for two reasons. One, there are some textures in Frozen 2 that I want to talk about, sort of the rock and roll side of things. But before we get there, exposition is always really difficult to crack. And I want to, and I think Some Things Never Change is such an interesting song. And it wasn't your first version of that, because Home
was the first thing we started
with. Yeah, so how did that evolve into what we ended up with
We loved Home, and everybody loved Home, but the problem with it was it didn't accomplish a lot of exposition. It just stayed with Anna and her feelings.
And it accomplished
Elsa, you didn't get Kristoff, right, you didn't get Olaf even.
Yeah, yeah. No one was really in
it. A great chance to highlight my whistling skills.
That was you.
Yes, that's true.
I believe it was.
That salty breeze blowing through the fjord. I hear those creaky ships as old board meets old board. I breathe in the place I live and wonder what else can I give this home, my home. Wandering through the town with everyone doing all of their stuff. Somewhere in my heart I feel I've not yet done enough for these people I know.
We realized that one of the great things, great insights that Jen and Chris had was that Anna was a fairy tale character and Elsa was an epic character, a mythical character. So we wanted to treat Elsa's music as though it were really that sort of mythic, almost a pop opera kind of sound, and that Anna should have a more folksy sound, because we didn't want to go, she was no longer the typical Disney princess anymore. She had found Kristoff. She had found true love with her sister. And so we thought, okay, we're not going to reference Alan Menken anymore. We're going to do something else with her. And so we thought of that ukulele kind of folksy feeling for Home. And then when that had to fall on the floor, we went to more of that piano riff. It's still folksy. It's still kind of down home. We have a banjo going.
When Kristoff shows up, suddenly it gets very, I'm like, oh, poor Kristoff. Is he still living in the woods?
Well, I think of it as one of the things that was very important from Chris and Jen. Again, almost everything we do is in dialogue with Chris and Jen and what they want and their vision for the movie. Is that we knew it needed to be a happy, welcome back to Arendelle kind of thing, but we had done that in the shorts, and those burn out fast. You don't want to see them happy. We want to know we're going somewhere.
It's like telling people that water is wet.
Right.
It's like everybody knows.
But it needed to have a soupçon of bittersweet, which I was like, the fall feels like that. And we were writing it in the fall, too. And the fall in New York is, for me, it's a very bittersweet time. It's so beautiful, but it means like summer's over and you're going into something dark. You're going into, into a time of year that you're just gonna feel bad for 3 months.
And here we are.
Welcome to LA.
So one of the insights there was, let's make the musical equivalent of what fall feels like, what a harvest festival feels like. The other insight is maybe I need to move to LA.
Yes.
Yeah. No, that's funny. Well, it has this kind of, it's funny that it's called Some Things Never Change in a season of change in a movie where everyone's going to change,
right.
You know, so
yeah,
it's obviously not true. But I just think it's such an interesting lyrical concept as well. Kind of where did that come from? Yeah.
Well, we wrote it very often. You write the intro that you think you need, and then at the very end of the process, you scrap that intro and write the intro you know you need, because you know what the story is better now.
Right.
And we knew what we needed to set up.
The things are restless. Could that be why I'm hearing this call? Is something coming? I'm not sure I want things to change at all. These days are precious. Can't let them slip away. I can't freeze this moment, but I can still go out and seize this day.
It'll be older.
It's time to count our blessings beneath an autumn sky.
We'll always live in a kingdom of plenty that stands for the good of the many.
And I promise you the flag of bearing down will always fly.
Our flag will always fly.
Our flag will always fly.
Our flag will always fly.
Some things never change. Turn around and the time has flown. Though the future remains unknown, may our good luck last, may our past be past. Times will be fast, it's true. Some things never change.
And I'm holding on tight to you. Holding on tight to you.
Holding on tight to you.
Holding on tight to you.
I'm holding on tight to you.
We'll be back with part two of our interview on the next episode of The Soundtrack Show. Thank you. The Soundtrack Show is an iHeartRadio podcast. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.